This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Things are getting bad. Remember, we were grappling with a high food insecurity situation as a result of the poor agricultural season. This was also impacted by the economic challenges. And now we have this pandemic, which by all indications is threatening the already 7.7 million food insecure people in Zimbabwe.
That's the director of the World Food Program in Zimbabwe on rising food insecurity in the country. Details coming up. Also, there have been mixed feelings in South Africa after more than 200 Cuban health personnel and specialists have been called to help fight the coronavirus. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, we start with our top story. In South Africa, many homeless people have left the temporary shelters established for them by the state because of the COVID-19 pandemic. They say conditions are so bad at the government facilities that they'd prefer to live on the streets. The state has put together a multi-billion dollar relief package to help needy South Africans as a lockdown designed to prevent the spread of the coronavirus devastates the economy. Darren Taylor has more from Johannesburg.
Throwing rocks. Are they burning stuff now?
An aid worker in Cape Town takes cell phone footage of homeless people escaping from a camp where they've been confined since South Africa's lockdown began more than a month ago. Similar scenes are playing out elsewhere in the country. In Western Johannesburg, on a field dotted with flimsy tents, a man who now lives here, Johnny Satekhe, says the camp's disgusting.
At some point you find that there's about 13 or 14 people who are sleeping in one tent. The chances of them infecting everyone in there, they are very high.
Thank you.
They are very high.
Thank you.
And then there's people who also sleep up there in those benches at night. There is no facilities for water and sanitation and stuff. One of the guys is using the tap just to pass. There's a problem with food.
In the camp, says Satekhe, it's impossible to practice the social distancing necessary to minimize the possibility of getting COVID-19.
As you can see, the place already is overcrowded. The number has risen, and they keep on bringing a group of more people each and every day. So we cannot be having a social distancing here. There is no mask, there is no gloves for everyone who's around here. We don't even have the sanitizers. And you should understand one thing.
There are only a few security guards present. As a consequence, says Satekhe, the homeless people here often fight, especially because there's never enough food for all of them.
And the very same meals that they brought you, I can show you the picture of the food.
Yeah.
You won't even eat that yourself. You cannot eat that food. So it's a problem.
No official at the scene was willing to speak with VOA, but the Johannesburg City Council has acknowledged that some of the 200 temporary facilities set up for the homeless are overpopulated. It says it's doing its best to make sure that good food is delivered to the shelters three times a day.
It's quiet from Soweto to the city. There's no one in the streets.
Every day, Sonic Rabulane trudges almost 20 miles from his home in the township to the suburbs of Johannesburg. The beggar says he'd like to obey the lockdown rules, but he simply cannot.
I broke the law because I'm a single parent with two children and unemployed, so I had to come to the city to ask for help and look for help, more especially of food supply.
Aren't you scared, though, that the police or the army will cause trouble with you?
I am scared, but it's a risk I had to take.
People aren't opening their doors to him anymore, says Rabulane, because they fear he's infected with COVID-19. He's also worried because he isn't feeling well.
There is a slight cough, but I have to eat so I can live another day.
Now you have to knock on doors. If they open, you will be in direct contact with them. Are you not afraid of getting COVID-19?
Yes, I am, and it's very dangerous. If I had more information, I doubt I'd be here right now, yes.
Sifiso Zulu usually earns money by guarding cars in a street that once hummed with busy restaurants and bars.
There's no cars now. This thing is killing us because as we are afraid of going to gym and afraid of crime, I normally go house to house and beg for food to avoid crime, you see. You don't want to.
Zulu sleeps with fellow homeless people in a doorway of a restaurant that's been closed for more than a month.
The police told us we should not sleep there because of the corona lockdown. They even banned our blankets. They say this lockdown we should stay indoors. This corona thing.
The government says it will give special coronavirus grants to the poor, but to qualify for the money, they must present identification documents to the relevant authorities. This is paperwork that most homeless individuals do not have. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
A United Nations report lists Zimbabwe as one of the most food insecure nation on the continent after a year of growing problems. Reporter Kudzai Zinawashi has the details.
Eddie Rowe is the country director for the World Food Programme in Zimbabwe. He explains the current food security situation.
Things are getting bad. Remember, we were grappling with a high food insecurity situation as a result of the poor agricultural season. This was also impacted by the economic challenges. And now we have this pandemic, which by all indications is threatening the already 7.7 million food insecure people in Zimbabwe.
Rowe says the number could increase over the next months. James Maiden is with UNICEF in Zimbabwe. He says part of the 7.7 million are children and women.
Out of this, over 1.1 million young children and women are in need of nutrition humanitarian services, out of which 95,000 children require immediate life-saving support because they are acutely malnutrition. This situation is worsening with over 8 out of 10 children who do not eat well enough across Zimbabwe.
Rowe says the coronavirus outbreak is making the situation worse.
There is a grave impact of this pandemic on food security in Zimbabwe. It is impacting on food systems to the extent that availability of basic commodities in local markets are dwindling by the day. The limited availability of commodities has also precipitated price hikes to the extent that the average household cannot procure basic commodities for their daily meals.
Zimbabwe has been in a lockdown for over a month, wiping out the incomes for most of those in the informal sector, who usually rely on daily income from vending and other menial jobs. The pandemic has seen more people in urban areas become food insecure as companies cut salaries or lay off workers. Rowe says these factors are pushing WFP to increase services in towns.
Most definitely. When you look at the scale, perhaps not to even underestimate the impact in the rural areas, but I think in the context of Zimbabwe, the impact is most felt in the urban areas. We've expanded in the urban areas and we intend to increase our support.
In early April, WFP and other partners said they needed more funding to provide life-saving aid. While officials are grateful for the support they have received so far, UNICEF's Maiden says they need more help.
The needs are great, and the UN, through its humanitarian appeal, requires $715 million to respond to the drought and economic hardships across all sectors, as well as the COVID-19 response. The current funding is inadequate. UNICEF and others are appealing for further support to respond to these emergencies and provide life-saving interventions.
Maiden says for nutrition alone, they need about $18.8 million to respond to the crisis, but they only have about 19% of that. Rowe says WFP has a shortfall of about $130 million. Prospects for the crops in the next harvesting season are bleak. Zimbabwe has had another dry spell this season. Rowe says the long-term effects of food insecurity could be partial intellectual capacity and stunted growth. This crisis is not only in Zimbabwe. South Sudan, northern Nigeria, Ethiopia, and Somalia are among the worst affected countries. Rowe says almost every country in Africa may be affected, and they will struggle to cope with rising prices on the international markets because of widespread COVID-19 shutdowns. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
While health workers fighting the coronavirus around the world have been cheered in public, in Malawi, they complain of insults, stigma, and discrimination. Malawi so far has confirmed 33 cases of COVID-19 and 3 deaths. But health workers say they are assumed to have the virus, shunned in public, refused access to public transport, and even evicted from rented houses. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The mayor of Malawi's capital, Lilongwe, recently condemned the practice of shunning healthcare workers for fears they have COVID-19. Juliana Kaduya asked members of the public to appreciate what these workers are doing in saving the lives of coronavirus patients. But a nurse at Kamuzu Central Hospital in Lilongwe, who refused to be named for fear of reprisals, told VOA Thursday the abuse continues. We will call her Annie Banda. Banda said in a telephone interview that some passengers blocked her as she tried to climb aboard a minibus on her way to work Tuesday. She says, when I was boarding a minibus, a female passenger charged at me saying, "These are the ones who are carrying Ebola," instead of saying coronavirus, and they should not come in here. Banda said the confrontation forced her to take a taxi to work. The National Organization for Nurses and Midwives of Malawi says it has received several complaints and video clips about minibus operators not allowing nurses to board their vehicles. Its president, Charles Smeza, spoke to VOA.
Even some landlords, you know, have vacated our colleagues at the health worker that are renting out their houses to say, "No, you can't be in my house. You guys are infected, so you infect my house." You know, we've received those grievances and we've declined. You know, it's unfair.
Last week, a local online publication ran a story about communities in southern Malawi threatening to evict or kill a health worker who handled a patient later found to be positive for COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. They feared the health worker was also infected and as a result would infect the whole area. Smeza says some health facilities have responded to the complaints by arranging special vehicles to transport their medical staff. Health workers like Banda have resolved to put on civilian gear whenever they travel by public transport. She says, "We are now carrying our uniforms in the bags. You can't see a nurse boarding a minibus in uniform. You even can't see a nurse walking in public in uniform to catch a bus." Health Ministry spokesperson Joshua Malango declined to comment on the matter Thursday, saying the ministry has yet to receive official complaints from health workers. In the meantime, health workers in Malawi's public hospitals are holding sit-ins aimed at pushing the government to give them personal protective equipment, a move they believe will also help reduce suspicion that they are carriers of COVID-19. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
There have been mixed feelings in South Africa after more than 200 Cuban health personnel and specialists have been called to help fight the coronavirus. The government has welcomed them, but some health professionals groups are not entirely happy with their presence. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The 217 health professionals arrived in a chartered plane this week after the government made a request to the Cuban government. The group includes epidemiologists, healthcare statisticians, family health practitioners, public health physicians, and engineers. But their presence has angered health professionals, bodies, and unions, who say there are thousands of unemployed South African doctors and nurses that the government has told there is no work. Dr. Angelique Kutsiye is a member of the South African Medical Association.
We haven't worked out all our healthcare persons, where we can put them and how many is unemployed currently that we can maybe roll into this to get more doctors and health statisticians to be able to provide services.
Simon Shungwani, the president of the Democratic Nursing Organization of South Africa, says the country has thousands of jobless nurses ready to take the jobs given to the Cubans.
The South African health professionals that are currently unemployed, doctors who completed community service, they were told there's no employment, they still want employment and to help the country. Being a South African, it should not be a sin and therefore being disregarded if there is an opportunity to get employment.
Health Minister Zweli Mkhize says the government is already in the process of recruiting local doctors and nurses.
We have an understanding with all the provinces and the MECs that in this regard, they will therefore be approaching those available to take them up.
And one academia, Somato Dafigeni, says the Cubans' skills and experience are crucial in fighting the pandemic.
Cuba globally, even by its own detractors, is recognized to have one of the best health systems in the world. And that in itself, I think, will be key in winter. We are going to be stretched so thin. Therefore, the coming in of Cubans comes at the right time.
President Cyril Ramaphosa has also moved in to calm the situation, saying Cuba has always stood with South Africa since the apartheid era.
This is a continuation of the wonderful relationship that President Mandela forged with President Fidel Castro. We are going to spread them throughout the country so that they can bolster the efforts that our really courageous health professionals and health workers are making in fighting this pandemic.
The Cuban health professionals are expected to remain in South Africa for the next 12 months at a cost of about $22 million. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Vowing to press his assault to seize Tripoli, Libya's eastern-based military commander Khalifa Haftar claims he has a popular mandate to govern the country, declaring a key political deal is over. The European Union dismissed Haftar's move as unacceptable, saying any attempt to impose a unilateral solution by force will never provide a sustainable solution to Libya's crisis. Russia, which backed Haftar, also rejected his move, and the U.S. called for a humanitarian truce in light of the coronavirus outbreak. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi discussed these developments with Wolfgang Porstai, a security analyst at the National Council for U.S.-Libya Relations.
There are two aspects which have probably convinced Haftar that he needs to try to regain the initiative in Libya by this step. The military situation gets increasingly difficult for the LNA, the Libyan National Army. The casualties of Haftar's Libyan National Army are mounting. They are actually no match for the sophisticated equipped Turkish troops in Libya. Turkish combat drones are dominating the only supply route for the LNA to Bani Walid and Tahuna over Tripoli. Turkish electronic warfare pinpoints their locations of headquarters and artillery sites, and they are subsequently attacked either by Turkish long-range precision artillery or by combat drones. On the other side, Turkish air defense prevents the LNA drones, which are provided by the Emirates, and fighter jets from operating over Tripoli and Misrata. The second aspect is the political process is in a dead-end road since months. The Shkira agreement, the Libya political agreement, which was signed in December 2015, was negotiated and signed by people who were not representative for those in power on the ground in Libya. The GNA moved subsequently to Tripoli, which is under control of local militias. Numerous conferences and initiatives up to the most recent Berlin conference have led to nowhere. And the people in the east, and also some people in the south and some people outside of Tripoli and Misrata, are increasingly fed up with this. So Haftar actually probably hopes that by cancelling the Shkira agreement, he may satisfy the wishes of those people I've just referred to and pave the way for a new initiative. But I'm not really sure that this step will work in the way he intends.
But the European Union dismissed Haftar's move as unacceptable, stating that any attempt to push forward a unilateral solution by force will never provide a sustainable solution to Libya's crisis. What do you make of that?
European interests are currently severely endangered by the Turkish intervention in Libya. Also, the migration route from the Mediterranean towards Europe is controlled by Turkey, in addition to the route from Turkey. That not only the gas pipelines from the east are coming mainly, eastern Mediterranean coming mainly through Turkish territory, but now this would mean that also the Green Stream pipeline from Libya would run through Turkish-dominated territory. They also fear that the Turkish offensive would not stop or could not stop in Libya. They fear that the Turkish expansion could continue further on to Algeria and the Sahel states. And all this is certainly not in the European interest. But currently, it doesn't look like the Europeans have a real plan how to react to the Turkish intervention and how to react to the new situation in Libya.
Russia, which backed Haftar, rejected his move and called on the government of National Accord to negotiate a political solution with him. Would that convince Haftar that there is no military or unilateral solution to the crisis in Libya?
Haftar trusted Moscow, or he needed to trust them, when they brokered this ceasefire in January. But as Turkey used the situation immediately to deploy sophisticated weapon systems, in particular air defense systems, to Libya, which have changed the game entirely, he lost much of his trust in the Russians. So the Russian influence on the LNA is not as high as it was in January. And I think that some in the LNA have realized right now that under the current conditions, there is no way for them to win the war. But on the other side, many hope that Turkey will not be able to sustain its efforts in the long run, in particular if they fight the war in Syria would break out again. They hope that Turkey would be forced to focus again on Syria in the next months. On the other side, it is very unlikely that the GNA's Operation Vulcano would stop right now. They believe, and it could well be that they are right, that they are close to a decisive victory, and I don't see any reason why they should now agree to anything short of the capitulation of the LNA.
The U.S. called for a humanitarian truce and an immediate cessation of hostilities in light of the coronavirus outbreak. Would Haftar agree to that, especially after his recent military losses to GNA forces backed by the Turkish involvement?
No. The coronavirus did not yet affect the forces on the ground in the greater Tripoli area that much to force them to accept the ceasefire. I think it is more likely that the LNA would agree than the other side. The GNA Operation Vulcano will at least aim now to defeat the LNA decisively in Tripolitania and to prepare the ground for the next steps towards the south and the Sirte Basin. So, in a nutshell, the prospects for a ceasefire in Libya are still dire.
That was Wolfgang Poshtai, a security analyst at the National Council for U.S.-Libya Relations, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shinawi. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, I'm Yehius Wuhib in Washington, thanking you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.